Welcome everyone to a Baseball America College podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel from the I'm in the Baseball America podcast nook. Aaron, of course, out on the West Coast. The 2013 regular season is here, Aaron. Let's just jump right in to this week's college podcast. We still got a Google Hangout to do. We'll have the Google Plus Hangout added on to our college coverage this year with the chat, the top 25 tracker, the top 25 rankings, the weekend preview, the mailbag, the whole panoply of Baseball America college coverage. No one brings it to you like Baseball America and Aaron Fitt. So Aaron,
are you not entertained, listeners? Are you not entertained?
I love it. I love that reference. It's still a good reference.
Thank you.
Aaron, I don't think anyone's going to be entertained by the top seven in our rankings because we went chalk. But there was movement in our top 10, and that movement shockingly comes from the Southeastern Conference team as Ole Miss sweeps TCU, preseason number 13 Ole Miss, sweeps number 14 in the preseason TCU. So now we're in between Vanderbilt at 2, Arkansas at 3, Mississippi State at 5, South Carolina at 7, and Ole Miss at 8, LSU at 9. My math skills are terrible, but I can count 6 of our top 9 teams are from the Southeastern Conference, and that is a lot of teams.
That's a lot of teams. 7 out of 11. I mean, man, and what is it? I believe still 8 of the top 25, if I'm not mistaken.
8 of 17. With
8 of 17, yeah.
Down there at 17.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, this league is crazy deep, and I think Ole Miss, you know, justified its ranking. We were, you know, maybe a little more aggressive with Ole Miss than some of the other rankings. I haven't studied all the other rankings, I'll be honest, but I feel like we were, you know, we were pretty high on the Rebels. You know, they showed why this weekend. I think they're going to be a really good run prevention outfit. You know, I love, obviously, the front line pitching with Bobby Wall and Mike Myers. You know, we talked about Chris Ellis, the emerging Sunday guy. Love the improved depth of this bullpen. You know, last year, of course, they had four guys that seemed like that they could trust. And when Brett Huber was dealing with that nagging back injury, they had to move R.J. Heifele from the Sunday roll into the bullpen to stabilize it. And then they struggled on Sundays because they just didn't have enough quality arms. And now, all of a sudden, you know, you've got Huber healthy again, and you've got a great supporting cast in that bullpen. You saw Aaron Greenwood pitch well this weekend. You saw Tanner Bailey. They have Josh Laxer who pitched well on Sunday. You know, Hutton Buchanan's back there. All these guys are now more seasoned and they're improved. And you know, the question was the lineup and the guys that they've been talking about that have kind of had buzz in the fall and the spring performed this weekend. Austin Bosfield especially, and Stuart Turner, the catcher that they really like, had a big grand slam in the first inning on Sunday, I believe. So, you know, this lineup should be improved. We've talked about the speed and the defense. I mean, this is, I think, a pretty complete team.
Yeah, it feels like a team that can beat you in a lot of different ways. And the pitching is, you know, whenever you have a guy like Bobby Wall, that's going to be, you know, to be your Friday guy, to start things, to be a guy who has Team USA experience, SEC experience, could be a first-round pick. That's an easy place to start, and he pitched well, but I think overall, like you said, what stands out about Ole Miss is the balance, and they also have some great names here, and I'm just noticing Sykes Orvis. How have I missed Sykes Orvis? That's a great name.
That is a great name, absolutely.
And that's all name team fodder. College baseball seems like it gives you more than its fair share of great names. Sykes Orvis, I've always been partial. Way back in the day, obviously in recent years, Quintavious Drains was my personal cheese ball for names. But I always used to like, back in the day, Stanford had a couple of crazy names with Eric Van Zant, which was spelled really A-R-I-K. Had a couple of Erics. We also had Eric Hempe at South Carolina who spelled it that way. And then they had one of my favorite names at Stanford, Tobin Swope. Oh, that was a great name.
I like how you're going off on a names tangent here. We're supposed to keep this tight. Come on, Johnny.
Can't do it, Aaron. I can't do tight. For TCU, Aaron, I guess the obvious concern here is, even though Ole Miss is really good, and we talked about their pitching depth, five runs, or I guess four runs in the whole weekend for TCU. Yeah. Still the Big 12 favorite. I mean, this weekend doesn't change that. What, in your mind, just what has to change or what has to improve for TCU to get going a little offensively? Who are maybe the players who should spark them as they improve from this weekend sweep?
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly they need They need Kevin Krohn to be the force in the middle of the lineup. I think that's really a key guy. I mean, that's kind of obvious. But, you know, Krohn and Odell, the sophomores, and Jarek Suter, those guys are kind of the backbone of this lineup now. You know, and they still have Jansen Whitty, of course, who actually had, a decent first weekend. They like Cody Jones at the top of the lineup. I mean, I think the top five guys should be pretty good. It's the back half of the lineup that I worry more about. You know, I feel like there's less firepower in the second half of the lineup than they're used to having there. So, you know, they need to pitch and they need to play defense. And you know, they pitched pretty well this weekend. I mean, they're still going to win a lot of games because of their arms and their athleticism. And they'll better days are ahead for them offensively. I mean, you know, this is like I said, this was an elite, I think, pitching and defense team that they were playing against. And they are not an elite offense. They're just not. That's not how they're constructed this year. But they will hit better than they did this weekend. And I think that they're still, for me, it's still the team to beat in the Big 12 this year.
And another team in that general geographic footprint, Rice, with a series win this weekend. That was the other big top 25 series. Rice over Stanford, winning two out of the three games in that series. Sounds like, real quick, Aaron, that's negative. Mark Capel had a really good year last year, but when he lost, with the exception of Florida State, it seemed like the stuff was there. The first round, front of the first round stuff was there. But for whatever reason, in a Garrett Cole kind of way, Mark Capel can still be hittable. Yeah. Is that kind of your quick read on Friday and how good Austin Kubica was? A little bit about that.
I mean, you know, Capel only lost twice last year. The other time, was it Fresno State that beat him early on, I think?
I think so. I think you're right.
I mean, he had a pretty darn good junior year.
Yes, he did.
Earlier in his career, you're right. I mean, he'd be more susceptible to this kind of stuff. But I don't know. I mean, it sounded like, from what I understand, the stuff was good, like you said, this weekend. And, you know, no cause for alarm, certainly, with Mark Capel. He'll be fine. The lineup, you know, I mean, they missed Austin Wilson's presence the last two games of the series. You know, just a minor injury, maybe a strain or something like that below the elbow, I think I read. You know, he should be back. But they tried different lineup combinations. And, you know, Stanford early in the season, traditionally, they play these tough schedules and they like to kind of see where they're at against good competition. And they will try a variety of lineup combinations, you know, and rotate a combination of the mound as well, to try to find what's working for them. And they've got a lot of depth in this lineup now, and guys like, you know, Austin Barr and Austin Slater, and you know, these sophomores that didn't get to play a lot last year that have talent, they're going to get their chances to show what they can do now. So, you know, I think it'll take a little time for this team to gel. I think by the time conference play starts, we'll have a better idea of who Stanford is, and they'll have a better idea of who they are. I mean, I still think they're a very talented club. They got a lot of big names and prospects in that lineup that got shut down by Rice's pitching staff this weekend. I mean, four runs in three games for a team as talented as Stanford. I mean, that's, you know, that's impressive work by the Owls. Certainly got to give them credit. Kubica, I guess, had a good slider going this weekend, got those 12 strikeouts. He pitched, you know, in and out of trouble a little bit, but made big pitches when he had to. And then John Sims on Sunday, I think, was fantastic. I mean, seven innings of one-hit ball. You know, Wayne Graham talked about it in our weekend preview last week. You know, this guy had some kind of a procedure in the fall to improve his breathing. There was some kind of a nose issue there. And Wayne Graham said he thinks it's going to make a big difference for him, and you know, that he'll have a huge season because he can sleep now, you know, which that's kind of important. You know, so far so good, and that guy was fantastic. And then, you know, they can afford maybe to keep him in that role going forward if they want to, because it looks like they've got themselves a pretty good closer with Lamont back there, who had pitched well twice this weekend. So I don't know what they're going to do with Kevin McCann when and if he returns. It sounded like they weren't really sure about the nature of his injury when I talked to Coach Graham last week, so I have no idea how long he's going to be out. But when he returns, I wonder if they'll just leave Sims in the rotation anyway.
Yeah, I think John Sims voted for yes on the rotation this weekend with seven one-hit innings, even with Stanford without Austin Wilson. Stanford, like we said, a very deep lineup. It's a very deep team, and they have other options to score, and they just couldn't score against Rice what do you know, Rice is good at pitching. That seems to happen year in and year out. That's why Wayne Graham has all those rings on that poster. Aaron, other top 25 team that seemed like it really jumped out at us. Well, I guess two in our preseason top 25 jumped out at us. One for a good reason, one for a bad reason. Mississippi State for a good reason. They went and swept four games from visiting Portland. Not that we were surprised that they swept Portland, but their dominance was impressive. And then one that you were at least in part, was San Diego State against San Diego. And not a big shock necessarily that USD got swept by San Diego State. It sounds like the Aztecs kind of have played very well against the Toreros. The Dons are San Francisco. But talk a little bit about the new ballpark at University of San Diego, that Rich Hill and the fundraising job that he did there. And it just sounds like the USD has one of the showplace ballparks, if not the showplace ballpark on the West Coast right now.
To me, it comes down to USD and Oregon. I think those are head and shoulders above everything else on the West Coast. This place is really fantastic. You know, I love the fact that they tied it in with the architecture of the campus. You know, they've got that beautiful vaulted entryway when you first walk up, and it's got the same kind of color scheme as the rest of the campus, and it just is it's beautiful. You know, you walk in and they still have that natural seating bowl that they took advantage of, and so it's just it's very organic, you know. And you walk in and you get this view deck that looks down across the entire seating bowl in the field. Then you walk down some stairs out of the open air concourse, which has great sight lines. I mean, one of the things I really like about this ballpark is, when you're in line at the concession stand, you know, people always say, with this new wave of ballparks, is you can watch the game while you're waiting for your hot dog. Well, this park is really true because of the angle, I feel like, of the seats. I mean, you got a really good view of the action all the way up until you pay for your food. It's nice. So they did a great job with this park, and it's going to be fantastic for them. The locker room is beautiful. I mean, you know, it's a big league caliber locker room. It's really nice. I wonder if this weekend, you know, some of the pomp and circumstance and just the frenzied last week to get this thing ready. I mean, their video board, their brand new scoreboard that they put up out there, which is really nice also, that was installed, 24 hours, I think, before the game started on Friday. Huh. They're pouring concrete, 2 days, 3 days before the thing opened. I mean, out in the concourse. I mean, it was really a mad dash to the finish line. The players, were kind of rushing around, and it felt like their heads were on a swivel a little bit. But for all that, hey, they were in those games. I mean, they, 2 days in a row, Saturday and Sunday, you got runners on second and third and nobody out in the ninth inning, down two runs. And against a freshman closer in Bubba Derby, and Bubba shut him down. I mean, give that guy some credit. Freshman closer coming in, striking out, Chris Bryant and Connor Joe, and, he had three straight strikeouts in that game with the bases loaded after inheriting that jam on Sunday. That's amazing for a freshman. And then the day before that, of course, he also, came up pretty big. So to me, that guy, he's interesting. I mean, he's got a little Trevor Gott in him from Kentucky, and one of those small right-handers, not as much arm strength, but it got the mean streak. I liked San Diego State's team. You know, it's a much deeper pitching staff. It's got the frontline arms with Cedaroth and Walby. And it's strong up the middle. I mean, Greg Allen is a stud in center field. He's going to be a real, I think, big time draft guy, switch hitting, center fielder with speed and great range and instincts, and can hit from both sides. He put on a show this weekend, and, Tim Zier and Evan Potter are good in the middle infield, and they got a great catcher, I think, in Jake Romanski. So, watch out for the Aztecs. They're very much improved.
Let me tell you something. If you like college baseball and you didn't get jacked by Aaron getting all excited about Bubba Derby and the Aztecs, and you don't like college baseball, I'm calling you out, because Aaron, that was awesome. You got me. You might have kick-started my heart there, if I can quote Motley Crue with the. Nice. I don't care. I can't believe I just did that. I'm going to edit that out of the podcast. No, I won't. But great stuff. I love your excitement for Bubba Derby. Hey, Bubba Derby getting on the all-name team. Let's put Bubba Derby into the mix. I mean, that's awesome.
A great name. That's a great name right there.
It's a great name, and I'll tell you, I thought of so many things there, Aaron, I could go off on, but I'm trying to keep it tangentless, but I will just ask you this question. It really does seem like, again, I'm going to date myself, but back in 1998 was the first time that we did, college baseball ballpark rankings, And it was hard to get to 12. You know, we went to 12, I think it was. Maybe 15. I think it was 12, though. And, I mean, Ohio State made the rankings. And, you know, Tennessee made the rankings. And, you know, basically there were like 5 to 7 real show places in college baseball at that time. And then the other teams that got on there were because they had larger stadiums or, you know, they could seat 3,000 people. But then we did it again in 2003, I feel like, and we might have done it one time since then. But now if you did college baseball ballpark rankings, you'd have to go to like 50. It is amazing how many nice – and the building boom, the growth in this sport in the last 15 years – the most tangible sign, because I remember, I forget who it was, you retweeted a tremendous-looking image of the new ballpark at Dallas Baptist.
That's right.
I mean, the building boom in college baseball, and just some of the places, the schools where you see these show places, these colleges that have decided that they can compete on a national level in college baseball more than they can in other sports, and they put their money where their mouth is. It's just amazing, and it's great to see for the sport.
You nailed it. I mean, that's a great point. You talk about Dallas Baptist and San Diego with some of the nicer facilities. I mean, that shows you. You're right. This is a sport where you don't have to be in the SEC to compete on a national level. And sure, it helps when you're in the SEC. I mean, you look at all the beautiful facilities that have been – even the new ones that have just been built in the last couple of years with LSU and South Carolina and you know, the massive project at Ole Miss and Texas A&M now as well
in
the SEC. Finally remembered that they're in the SEC. How about that?
Good job. North Carolina here locally.
I mean, TCU.
That's right. But it's even but the smaller parks too, like that you even up north where you see teams build a 1,000-seat stadium or 1,500 seats. It's the ballparks. And then you mentioned Oregon earlier. It's the places. Oregon didn't even have baseball 5 years ago. Now they have the best facility in, you know, in the West Coast, and it's just amazing how many wherever you go in college baseball, whatever conference you're in, you're gonna find someone in that league who's got a really nice ballpark. And I just think it can't be understated how important that is. And I guess the biggest factor to me, it seems, Aaron, is that if you build a nice ballpark in college baseball, you're going to host a tournament. You can either host your conference tournament for some of these leagues, the smaller leagues, or you get to host postseason. You get to host regional and super regional, and that's something that's not even possible in basketball or football. You don't host postseason games in your on-campus stadium,
right.
And that is something that baseball offers that other sports just don't offer. So,
and that reminds me of one other point I want to make about this weekend. San Diego, so used to playing their games – in the daytime, they traditionally have struggled under the lights at night. And you know, when they hosted a regional across town at San Diego State a few years ago, they played very poorly at night. You know, this weekend they're playing under the lights for those first two games. And you know, I wonder if that might be a factor as well. If there's some adjustment period, you know, about getting used to playing at night. And San Diego State is used to playing at night. They have for years. I don't know, just something to think about.
I think there's something to that. That's always been an issue with the Cubs when the Cubs have had some good teams and when they first started playing more games under the lights at Wrigley Field. That was an issue. They did not. It's just a matter of baseball is a routine game. It's a matter of routine and rhythm. And, you know, I'm not going to go all Matt Doherty on you and talk about your body rhythm and all that kind of stuff. What was that stuff you talked about?
You got me. I blocked out the Doherty era, I think.
Smart man. Smart man. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. And Aaron, you know, speaking of lights, did Cal play under the lights this weekend? Or are those going to be ready for Pac-12 play?
Right, exactly. I think it's March.
Okay. It's another tip, another good news in college baseball where even Cal is getting lights, which is, again, they were on the chopping block 2 years ago and obviously went to Omaha and have rallied as a program. Aaron, we got a little sidetracked there. Let's talk about a couple other teams in our top 25 rankings that were impressive. You know, on our Google Plus Hangout, we talked about UC Irvine. I meant to ask you also about Cal State Fullerton, also in the Big West. I'm changing gears on you a little bit here.
Sure.
But the Titans, preseason top 25 team, pretty impressive weekend, it seems like, for Rick Vanderhook's second club. And as Fullerton wins two games against visiting Nebraska, beat USC, won a game at Cal State Bakersfield, seems like Cal State Fullerton offensively is going to take a big step forward from what they had last year.
I really like their lineup, you know, with some impact guys with Matt Chapman and J.D. Davis in that sophomore class that I think are going to take huge steps this year. And you saw J.D. Davis have a monster first weekend. That guy's got serious juice. He gives them some presence, you know, that they haven't had since Nick Ramirez left, really. And Chapman and you know, Michael Lorenzen, it sounds like he's much improved as a hitter. You know, and the depth and athleticism of that lineup, they're going to hit. They're going to score a lot of runs, I think, and they're going to defend. And, you know, the question was how much would they pitch? And I really like their freshman arms. But they are freshmen, you know, and they'll have their ups and downs. But a great start for Eshelman and Justin Garza, you know, two guys that have to have big years for them, especially with Kenny Matthews gone. I mean, it's a thinner staff than they had hoped probably that it would be. And so very encouraging. I mean, Garza, I've no doubt, I've never had a doubt that guy is going to be a monster in college baseball. And six innings, a two-hit shutout ball, that's a nice way to start it off. But, you know, those two guys and Graham Wiest, you know, they got some strike throwers.
Gaughan and Wiest are the holdover guys. They're experienced, solid guys. And they bring in, like you said, Garza and Eshelman. It just feels like a team that's got more answers than they had last year. Where last year was really they were scrap-tastic. You know, if they beat you, they beat you 3-2 or 4-2 and took advantage of your mistakes. Feels like they're the kind of team that maybe can make its own breaks this year. They're a little bit more capable, a little bit more physical. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I agree with you. No question about it. And you mentioned Kobe Gunna as well. It's a guy that I think is another guy that's going to take a step forward as a sophomore. It sounds like he's got more velocity and seven strong innings in his season debut. That's pretty loud.
Yeah, they gave up six extra base hits all weekend. That's pretty impressive. Aaron, I skipped over. I teased it earlier when we talked about USD. So I should mention one of the Cal State Fullerton went 4-0 this weekend. Mississippi State 4-0 this weekend. They take down Portland, visiting Portland, and the Bulldogs. Aaron, this is a very deep club. It feels like almost their strength is their depth, and that maybe their weakness. I wouldn't say it's a weakness, but last year you could really peg things to Stratton, and they had Chris Stratton who had that epic game against LSU, and they just had a true dominant Friday starter. They don't have that this year, but they really don't seem like they have any weaknesses other than that, Aaron. I mean, and they were on all their strengths, their athleticism, their pitching depth, their power arms, and the depth of their lineup. They were all on display this weekend against the visiting Pilots.
You nailed it. I mean, that's exactly right. They've got a lot of things to like. You know, and I think Jacob Lindgren might be the answer at that Friday spot. You know, he's got dynamic stuff. I mean, it's a power fastball, and it's a really good power breaking ball as well from the left side. He's kind of one of those little undersized but very physical left-handers. You know, like a Robbie Ross kind of a guy, kind of an obscure reference if you're a college fan, I guess.
That's okay. But Texas Rangers, big league left-hander. Come on, get on the program. Everybody knows who Robbie Ross is.
Right, okay. You know, this guy, I mean, he's got a chance to be awfully good. And you know, they got great starts from Evan Mitchell and Kendall Graveman this weekend and Louis Poyarena as well. You know, I've always been a fan of his. So lots of depth. We didn't even see Woodruff this weekend. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of arms and they hit. I mean, you know, we've been talking about Hunter Renfro for years, and you know, he got off to a good start, hit 357 this weekend, and you know, Wes Ray had a nice weekend before he got banged up a little bit and missed Sunday. Nothing to worry about there, but
I think you know, get banged up when you're 6'5", 272, and your coach is asking you to go first to third. You know, maybe they need to take it easy with Wes Ray on the first to thirds.
How about Adam Frazier, too, by the way? I mean, 8-for-16 this weekend. That guy is just a great college player. I mean, he makes them go. Yeah. And, you know, he kind of picked up right where he left off last year.
Really feels like with Frazier and Bradford, they have a couple of just great college table setter guys. And if they can keep Ray and Norris healthy and have that leap forward by Renfro, the top five in that lineup, maybe it's not going to be as potent as the middle of the order as Virginia Tech, which we brought into the rankings, and we talked more about them on the Google Plus Hangout. That, to me, is as potent a middle of the lineup as any club has in the whole country. But I feel like Mississippi State's offense is underrated, Aaron. I feel like if they keep those guys healthy, they're really going to they're gonna pound some people this year. And that has not been their motives. Excuse me, that has not been their MO the last couple of years. And I like their pitching staff like you do. You know, I know It's one weekend, but even coming off last year, Jonathan Holder, how many closers in the country would you put ahead of that guy? It feels like he's in the small group of elite closers in the country.
I'm with you. I mean, hey, a guy that had 9 saves and a 0.32 ERA last year, that's pretty loud. But you're right about I think the lineup being maybe a little underrated. I mean, heck, people look at their stats and they say, oh, they hit .251 last year. Why are they going to hit this year? Well, we believe in this talent and the experience and the depth of this lineup, and that's why we graded it a 60. I mean, their hitting is a 60 in the preseason, above average, and the power is a 50. And that, and if they were in a different ballpark, that might play even more. But even in this ballpark where the fences moved in a little bit, you're going to see a little bit more power production out of the Bulldogs this year.
I think so, Aaron. I'll wrap up. I'll have a final thought, and then you formulate a final thought from the top 25. I will just. Only game I ended up going to this weekend was Appalachian State at North Carolina State. Entertaining. We had great weather. It was good to see Trey Turner up to his old tricks, 2 more stolen bases. That guy's as dynamic an individual player as there is in college baseball. It was a down day for Carlos Rodon. The box score tells that. I mean, he did have, I think, 8 strikeouts, maybe 9. But obviously the NC State ace, preseason first-team All-American, gave up 3 home runs. He'd given up 2 all of last year. Gave up 3. Jalen Davis, I believe, is the freshman's name, who took him deep on a cutter in the first inning for Appalachian State. Very encouraging look at App State. Their defense was a little shaky. They gave NC State the runs that NC State got. Basically, App State gave them poor infield defense. But App State, a lot of new arms. Chris Pollard, their former head coach, has now moved on to Duke. Billy Jones doesn't quite have that same reputation as Pollard did as far as developing pitchers. Nice job this weekend. They threw some new guys into the fire, moved Rob Marciello to the back of the bullpen. He got the save. Nice blog post on our draft blog from Connor Glassy was a video of Marciello, who I wrote about last year when he went down to LSU, beat them on Sunday, pitched into the 9th inning. So big win for App State. Only 1 game. A little concerned for Carlos Rodon because his velocity was down, but I'm not that concerned about Carlos. I'm more concerned with NC State's lineup. Without Brett Williams, the fifth-year senior right fielder, to me, you were looking at Brett Williams as a key piece to replacing the fact that they lost their 2 big power bats from last year, and Danny Cannella to transfer, and Ryan Matthews, a fifth-year senior, to graduation and the draft. So, Matthews at 17, 18 home runs last year. Cannella was their 4-hole hitter. Those were significant losses for NC State. And right now, it was 1 game look, but if I were an opposing team, I wouldn't be frightened by anyone else in NC State's lineup outside of Trey Turner. If you keep him off the bases, it's hard to see NC State generating a lot of offense unless guys like Terrence Sine and some of their other veterans kind of make that step forward. The big guy who needs to make that step forward is Brett Austin, and I think Brett Austin knows that. So I was a little concerned. It was 1 game look, but I have a little concern about NC State's ability to generate offense outside of Trey Turner, and that's just something to monitor. You don't hit the panic button, but something to monitor going forward with the Wolfpack, which we dropped from 8 to 10.
I think I just have a hunch. I mean, who knows? But I have a feeling they could have bounced back and had a big weekend offensively after that Friday game. Look at North Carolina. I mean, they scored 1 run on Friday, and then they came back and scored a lot of runs. And look at UCLA. I mean, they scored, 2 against Minnesota Friday and then scored 28 the next 2 days. I mean, sometimes that happens. First game.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't want to look too much into it. And I think people are going to look into this and say, what's wrong with Rodon? I don't think a ton's wrong with Rodon. I think the bigger issue going forward for State is just, as I look at them on paper, after watching them the other day, I'm more interested to seeing how they respond offensively the rest of the year. That's where I'm really going. That's what I really would have watched for the rest of the weekend. How could they have come back, and how will they go going forward? They got Villanova, Wagner, and LaSalle coming in this weekend. But, Villanova's got a power arm. What's the guy's name? We just saw him Friday. Young.
Okay.
Nathan and Connor saw him against Monmouth the other day. I forget his first name. It's Young, but he was up to 94 miles an hour regularly in the first couple innings of that game. So NC State's gonna. I'm looking to that to see how they respond offensively from that again just 1 game. And really, the only reason we dropped them wasn't necessarily they lost 1 game. It was that Ole Miss played so well in sweeping the series, and LSU played very well as well. And sweeping its opening series, so I don't think anyone should push the panic button on the Wolfpack.
That's Pat Young, by the way, Villanova, who was pretty good in the Cape last year, and kind of a a sleeper draft guy. Maybe not a sleeper to scouts in Northeast, but anyway, you know, my final thought, my takeaway here this weekend, you know, I think I saw five games at five different parks, you know, 10 different teams. I had a lot of
awesome
impressions, and I'll write about some of them in Three Strikes. You know, I think USC getting the win on Sunday was pretty neat to see for Dan Hubbs getting his first victory against Nebraska. I mean, it was a come from behind ninth inning rally. You know, that team showed a little bit of poise and some talent too. I mean, the freshmen are really going to be fun to watch for USC. They're going to take their lumps. You know, Bazoyan and Timmy Robinson, those guys have big physicality and power potential. And, you know, I think they're going to strike out a lot, but they're going to have their good games too. And Bazoyan had a great game on Sunday, had three hits and showed a much better approach than I recall seeing from him in the past in high school. And then Kyle Toomey as well, the left-hander,
yep.
You know, that they're so excited about. I mean, he's got work to do. You know, he's got to improve the secondary stuff, but the fastball has so much life on it, and the arm action is so easy. There's so much projection, and you know, he just has a field of pitch with that fastball. You know, he's just a little like Kenny Matthews last year with Fullerton. You know, that's going to be his bread and butter. But he pitched pretty well into the seventh inning, and very encouraging performance. Pretty good crowd at USC. One of the better crowds I've seen there. I mean, it was, I don't know, it might have been 750 people.
It was 797, so good call.
Okay, well, there you go. But I mean, it wasn't, you know, so it wasn't like a SEC crowd or anything. I'm not trying to get carried away, but it was a good, lively crowd. I mean, fans were into it, and, you know, they had something to cheer about at the end. So, you know, good for SC. Nebraska, disappointing to let that game get away. Bad 0-4 weekend for Nebraska, but they're not that far off. I mean, you know, Northern team coming down to Southern California to start the year, took a little bit of lumps, need to get the pitching figured out. But I kind of like the top four or five guys in their lineup, you know, and I think they're going to be okay, but it'll take a little bit of time to get that thing going as well.
Aaron, that's definitely one of my projects for the rest of the day, is just as I was going around the internet this weekend and getting all the emails, and as we wrap up, was the attendance just looked great in college baseball this weekend. I mean, Cal State Bakersfield with 1,300 on Sunday against Fullerton. I saw Georgia Southern drew like 3,000 with Georgia in town and won series, if memory serves. So
they did.
So, I mean, just there was Penn, there's and NC State and North Carolina both had great crowds on Friday. NC State had like close to 2,400. It was standing room. I mean, it was there were the anticipation for that game was significant. We're in mid-February in college basketball country. That was unexpected. So I definitely want to do some research today, see what attendance was like around the country, because I have a feeling it was pretty good. And going back to our ballpark, you know, to start the year, I just think it's great to see that the state of college baseball is pretty doggone good. I'm excited for the season. You got me jacked. I'm telling you, when you talked about Bubba, what's his name? Bubba Derby. When you talked about Bubba Derby and you got going for the Aztecs, I mean, crying out loud, college baseball season's here, baby. Let's get fired up. I'm jacked.
How about, well, one final, I already said I was going to make my final thought, but you talked about home field advantages and crowds. And how about Pittsburgh going to Wichita State,
how
John?
How about that?
Sweeping the Shockers. First time Wichita has been swept at home since 1970.
That
Are
was
you
the
kidding me?
First home losses in the state in the month of February ever at home for a Gene Stephenson team. That was crazy. They were 69-0.
69-0 at home in February. I mean, my God, that is. First of all, I mean, you tip your cap to Wichita for that kind for those stats. I mean,
absolutely.
Statistics, but Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, they got a veteran team. They got a little bit of talent. They were a little excited about their team coming into the year. I'm sure we'll have some more on them coming up here at baseballamerica.com in the coming days or weeks, but they could be a team to watch there in that Big East. ACC? Big East.
I was about to say another Big East, but I was going to say for everybody who thinks that we're biased, hashtag ACC, you know, for Pittsburgh. But the excitement with the Pittsburgh baseball fans, all seven of them, was evident in our inboxes this week. And that's the next thing that has to happen, Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, Pittsburgh baseball, if you want to make that next step, have people come watch you when you play. But, of course, they probably won't play home games until April. So this is what happens when you're Pittsburgh. But that was a pretty huge weekend to note. So I'm glad you noted that one, Aaron. Good stuff. Great start to the college podcast. I'm going to tell you, the first time we ran this through, I wasn't as fired up. But after I screwed it up and lost the podcast into the ether, I'm fired up. So way to go, Fitzy. You got me jacked. You got me pumped and jacked.
A little more energy in take two. How about that? Must be the Red Bull, John. That's the difference. I cracked open the Red Bull.
That's it. That's completely it. Aaron Fitt. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Aaron Fitt, college baseball savant. Aaron, thanks for the time and the second time, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, John. Always a pleasure.
For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America College podcast. So long, everybody.